Chapter 12. Brothers in Chains. Cargos. The Land Raider tore across the wasteland, rocking and shaking over the broken earth. In the gunner's cupola, Cargos gripped the handle of the heavy bolter, sighting down the barrel at the shapes resolving through the dust. They were closing fast on the refugee convoy's rear guard. It was a hell of a convoy, streaming across the wasteland towards the Sanctum Imperialis. From the size of it, several refugee trains and retreating Legion forces had linked up to make their final run for Sanctuary. The War Master's horde had the numbers, though. Cargos felt an itch at the back of his head.
Soon, he told the nails. Almost there.
They bit back in reply, unsoothed. The nails had no patience. Logistics were meaningless. They fed on emotion. They wanted adrenaline. They wanted blood to flow, and he would be punished until he made it happen. It would be a risky assault, this close to the walls of the Sanctum Imperialis. The Delphic battlement ringing the Emperor's castle was only 5 kilometres to the west, leaving them practically in range of the wall guns. Within range of Titan guns, certainly, and just as definitely within Thunderhawk range. The forces at the Sanctum wouldn't bombard their own arriving convoys with blind fire, and the ash reduced all hopes of precision targeting at that range. Gunships, though, they were a possibility with the dust thinning day after day. Titans, they were a risk too. They were starting to venture away from the Delphic battlement, punishing any raiders that struck too close. Cargos's eye lenses had long since lost their ability to zoom and refocus. Endless incidental damage to his helmet over the war's course had killed that functionality. He had to look through magnoculars to make out the convoy's scale, or at least what the ash would let him make out.
"What do you see?"
Inzar called up from the tank's innards.
"It's a big one. We'll have to hit it hard to break through."
Inzar acknowledged him, and Cargos could hear the preacher relaying more orders over the vox. Their tank was at the lead of the assault force, his stolen 7th Legion Land Raider cutting ahead of the pack to form the tip of the ragged formation. With so many Imperial convoys streaming across the wasteland between the Palatine bastions, the bounty of targets made for easy prey. Scenting blood, the War Master's horde poured into No Man's Land in their hundreds of thousands, hunting down fleeing Imperials with abandon. Even the most directionless slaughter still served the war's purpose. Every soul killed in the districts of the Inner Palace was a soul that would never pick up a weapon to defend the Sanctum Imperialis. The Legion officers on the ground let their warriors loose, letting massacre and butchery become quaint tactical virtues. The Emperor, wherever he was, still couldn't see reason. That much was obvious to the War Master's horde. The closer they came to the walls of the final fortress, the weaker their never-born allies were, and the rarer their manifestations became. Cargos hadn't seen his Primarch since the astral display above Avalon days before, but Inzar was forever ready with assurances that Angron was out there, tearing down the Palatine bastions. Thoughts of his genesire made the nails sizzle through the meat of Cargos's mind. A not entirely unpleasant heat.
"An example for his sons to follow," the preacher had said. "A messiah.
Freedom from death. Immortality through annihilation." The words echoed through the gladiator's mind in a ceaseless cycle. He hadn't spoken any more of it, though he kept sensing Inzar's eyes upon him, judging. Always judging. As they drew closer to the convoy, the World Eater panned the viewfinder across the distant shapes of Legion armour and army transports. Given the Horde's advance, all retreat would soon be cut off. Fewer and fewer reinforcements were reaching the Sanctum. This column might even be the last. It was Cargos's 9th convoy raid, or perhaps his 10th. They tended to blend together, just like the days and nights. On the last one, be it the 8th or the 9th, they'd stolen the tank they now commanded. That had been Inzar's decision. Cargos had been content to sit huddled in the rattling confines of a rhino transport, but he freely admitted that their new ride made their predatory duty so much easier. The ash and dust were thinning over time, and that helped even more. Gunships were flying again in brief bursts. Titan support was beginning to show up. Orbital drops were no longer the purview of blind prayer. It was far easier to hunt when you could see what you were hunting. He turned the magnoculars to the west. He could see it now, the suggestion of it in the distance, a hazy shadow consistent with where the horizon was supposed to be. A siege wall. The last siege wall. Far from here, but not far enough. He called down to Inzar.
I can see the sanctum!
Inzar's reply came with a growl.
We're getting too close to the sanctum. Let us make this raid swift. In and out, my friend. No last stands, no heroes. Save it for the final assault.
Kargus heard this too, relayed across the vox. The Horde's shared communication channel turned into a howling orchestra of voices in reply. Military order was a truly thin facade these days. The Imperial convoys they hit were always slowed by the weight of their responsibilities. Legion tanks and Imperial army armor ringed the vulnerable, wounded, and civilians in their midst. But it was a simple matter of breaking through the outnumbered defenders to shatter their unity. Even their land raider, labouring at barely 40 kilometres an hour over the churned earth, was fast enough to catch the outriders at the edges of each burdened convoy. More than one defensive ring had refused to fight. Kargos thought little of it. It was a matter of naked practicality. The warriors of those legions considered it more prudent to reach the Sanctum Imperialis rather than die in vain out in the wasteland. Inzar, however, took great delight in watching the Imperials abandon their own wounded warriors and defenceless refugees. He chanted praise and thanks to his mad gods each time it happened, promising them a harvest of sacrifice. This was a promise he consistently delivered on. As they ranged ahead of the bulk of the slaughter, though, they ranged ahead of their own human forces and the demonic things that were born in the minutes after the massacres. The horde swelled with every death on either side, and Kargos found himself at the vanguard of a breathtaking tide. He sometimes caught Inzar listening to the scale of that tide. The preacher would tune into the general voxweb, allowing himself to be assailed by an infantry of shrieks, screams, snarls, and scrap code. To Kargos, it was just noise. He told himself he didn't hear any music in the sound, just beneath the surface, like a teasing undercurrent. He'd asked Inzar naturally,
"Why do you do that?"
The preacher had smiled.
"I like to meditate on the melody of enlightenment."
After the last raid, Inzar had summoned Kargos over to him. They stood in the shadow of the tank they were about to steal. To the west was Meru Bastion, a burning silhouette in the dust. Inzar had been walking among the bodies, dispatching the wounded that took his interest. Those he found uninteresting, he kicked aside, leaving them to bleed out and expire from their injuries.
"Preacher,"
Kargos greeted him.
"My friend," Inzar replied.
The chaplain was distracted, hauling a dying one-armed Imperial fist to his knees. The warrior's chest plate was horrendously ruptured, and his helmet had been torn clear, showing a vicious blade wound to the face that had stolen both of his eyes and damaged his mind. It was a miracle the warrior still lived at all. Inzar started scalping him.
"We will take this land raider," the chaplain said while he carved.
Kargos grunted noncommittally.
"If you say so.
Help me with this, would you?"
The Imperial fist struggled, but Kargos kept the dying man on his knees. The word-bearer ran a curved Colchisian dagger in a soaring circle around the top of the warrior's head, then took a fistful of his hair.
"For the Emperor!"
swore the Imperial fist.
"For the Emperor!"
"Yes, yes," Inzar humoured him.
The chaplain tightened his grip and pulled. There was the sound of wet leather tearing. Then Inzar kicked the scalped warrior to the ground. Kargos looked down at the Imperial fist. The man was crawling towards him, reaching with useless defiance in his fading eyes. The World Eater admired that. It showed gladiator spirit. A single bolt from his pistol cracked out, ending the Imperial Fist's useless protestations. Other warriors drew near, the mix of all nine of the War Master's legions that was becoming more common with every battle. Inzar bound his newest scalp to his belt, using the dead man's hair and a squirt of armor cement. He looked to the gathered Astartes as he did so.
"Which one of you wants to drive?"
A heavy bolter kicked in Kargos's grip. He raked it low, shooting to cripple, not kill. The White Scar's rhino, revving ahead of them, threw its left track with a shattering of treads, losing speed and falling out of formation. Kargos watched it as they raced past, grinning as two World Eaters' vehicles swung towards the hobbled prey. It was all he could do not to leap from the top of his tank and join in the slaughter. The convoy was turning out to be juicy prey. A great many Imperial Army vehicles, a few Skitari walkers, all ringed by a cluster of Legion armour. Several lesser convoys had streamed out from the Palatine Bastions and grouped together on their flight to the Sanctum Imperialis. This many defenders made it almost an even fight, a hard fight, which in turn made it twice as satisfying. It started out the way these engagements always began, in the familiar melodies of Legion warfare, the trading of long-range lascannon fire and Volkite beams, followed by the mid-range chatter of heavy bolters. The raiding party descended in predator packs, isolating outriders and stragglers before carving into the convoy's bulk. Kargos wasn't a man plagued by thoughts of honour and dishonour. In that regard, he shared Inzar's ideology. This was war, and in war soldiers fought to win. Honour was a construct, an irrelevant crutch for killers to feel better about the fact they killed. He'd never spared a moment for regret when the legions had leashed the galaxy with their overwhelming force. No civilization, human or alien, had been able to resist them, slaughtering entire cultures that never had a chance against the Imperium was no more or less honourable than carving apart these refugees. War was war. He'd spoken of this with Khan long ago, back when Kargos was 8th Company's pit champion, and the Legion was new to the nails. The whole of the 8th Assault was gathered, watching their brothers in the gladiator pits. The sounds of axes clashing rang off the Conqueror's metal walls. His captain had given a careful smile.
"There is more philosophy in your position than you admit."
Kargos had shaken his head, continuing to bind his axe to his vambrace. He and his chain brother were scheduled to fight next.
"I don't see it," he confessed. "I think you do," said Khan. "You just prefer to believe you're a simple creature. Good luck in the pit, Bloodspitter."
A bolt cracked against the Land Raider's armour plating only a metre from him, its detonation jarring Kargos back to the here and now. As the nails spiked to punish him for his distraction, he pulled his gun around and opened fire on the closest rhino, aiming for its treads. Red crept in at the edges of his vision, and with it, the adrenal sting of relief. It was starting again. He is on the ground, in the ash. Gorechild howls in his fist and in his head. Someone is screaming a language he doesn't understand, right in his ears. It's his own voice. Of course it's his own voice, magnified inside his helmet, but the shouting doesn't stop when he becomes aware he's doing it. A blood angel comes for him, but slow, too slow. Kargos sees the sword descending, sees where it will be, and he cuts back, taking the angel's hand off at the wrist. On the backswing, he hammers the angel to the ground with the flat of Gorechild's blade. The clang is loud enough to split the heavens. Rabid froth spatters the inside of his helmet as he screams and screams and prays, and he pulls himself up the side of an enemy tank, his muscles clenching in the epilogue of a laughing jag. The last breaths of laughter wheeze from his throat. He's up on the Land Raider's roof, moving, always moving. A bolt clips him, detonating against his pauldron. He rocks with it, still moving. The soldier in the cupola is human, too human to stop him. She raises a pistol, and Kargos stamps down as her hand comes up. Every bone in the woman's hand and forearm crunches, crushed to paste. Just more filth on the bottom of his boot. And Gorechild swings, and the teeth carve, and the soldier is split from the helmet down. And he is carving, bathed in sparks, his axe's teeth shrieking through the hull of the stalled Chimera. Then he's in, and it stinks of blood and marrow and misery. And he sees Imperial army on stretchers. The wounded are here. They can barely fight back, but it doesn't matter. They bleed like everyone bleeds, and he swings and chops and carves. And the relief of it, the sweetness of the rhythm of Gorechild rising and falling and rising and falling, and the perfume of the blood, and the song of the screaming. There's no pain now. He could cry with relief because there's no pain. But now they're all dead in here, and the nails bite again. And he is with Inzar. Side by side, the way he used to be side by side with Khan in battle. The way he used to be side by side with Skane in training. The way he used to be side by side with the Flesh Terror in the fighting pits. The preacher fights loud, swinging his Crozius mace and exhorting the warriors around him to fight on, proclaiming that the gods are watching, that this bloodshed is holy. Kargos doesn't know if it's true. He doesn't care. He cares only that the nails flood him with relief at the terminus of every axe swing, every bite into ceramite, every crunch into flesh, every grind through human meat. There's blood on his armour. He's red with it now. Blood for Angron. Blood for victory. Blood for Inzar's god of war, if that's what it takes to feel this relief. Inzar is here with him, killing at his side, chanting prayers, and each swing of his Crozius hits Ceramite with the sound of a cathedral bell. It's thunder, a devotional thunder. It rings in Kargos's ears, stinging the nails with the same cold relief as the running of blood, and he crashes to the earth, snarling in the dust as the White Scar rides by. He's down in the dust in the thick of it. Gorechild is on the ground out of reach, except it isn't, because one jerk of his arm whips the chain back and the axe leaps to his hand, and he grips the axe and rises to his feet again. The White Scar is gone. Kargos turns and looks for enemies in the dust. And there's another White Scar. This one's out of the saddle and grappling with a World Eater, and three heartbeats later it's over, because Kargos swings underarm, the blade carving up between the warrior's legs, and the axe teeth chewing and chewing with an arc of blood and sparks. And there are screams, and he can hear the others over the vox. He can just about make out their meaning. They're outnumbered. The convoy is being reinforced. They need to fall back. But he can't. He just can't. The fight is joined, and there's no falling back. No running away. The nails will split his skull apart if he tries. They'll change the chemicals in his head to acid and tar. He turns in dust, staggering, stumbling over the last blood angel he killed, and the nails steam in his skull like molten pistons. There, within the warring shadows, there in the ashen silhouettes, he sees an officer holding back and giving commands. Kargos moves in a staggering run as his muscles burn, and Gorechild sings its sawblade song. He passes Inzar, beating a downed Imperial fist to death, and he passes Drylath, tearing his sword free from the guts of another Blood Angel. But he passes too many others, dueling and being hacked down, and being strangled, and the voices were right. They're losing. The convoy's defenders are overwhelming them, but he doesn't care. He wants this officer's skull. He wants the rush. He wants the blood-wet relief that comes with glory. He kills his way closer, axe hacking with a searing lactic acid burn in his muscles, and Gorechild is a prince of blades, killing and rending and chopping so much easier than any other chain weapon he's ever held. Mica Dragon's Teeth rev in its blade, that's why. That's how it rips through armour and meat so well. Kargos cuts sideways, cleaving a blood angel down to the backbone, kicking the dying warrior away, and he's roaring a challenge at the officer, though it's a wordless thing, because his mouth won't form words right now, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's a challenge that needs no language, only rage. He reaches the officer, and the nails sing. The gut instinct of a lifelong brawler has him note the chainsword in the Blood Angel's hand and the flensing knife in the other. And it's familiar. It's so familiar that it hurts. But it doesn't matter. All that matters is the kill. Kargus cuts downward, and there's a clash as he's blocked, and chain teeth fly from the Blood Angel's sword, and he cuts again, and again he's blocked, and he's grunting with effort, and he pulls back for more room to take a wilder swing, and the Blood Angel weaves aside, and Kargus screams as he cuts empty air. They come together again, blade to blade, faceplate to faceplate, and again it's all so familiar. But there's no real link. There's no connection. There's only frustrated rage. Both warriors are panting, respiration coming in ragged sores through their helmets' vocalizers. Their blades are locked, axe on sword, sword against axe, and the two of them strain against one another. They're statues, motionless with a perfect equilibrium of rage and strength, and the first to disengage will invite the death blow. Genetically enhanced sinew strains in harmony with the fibre bundle cabling of their armour's false muscles, and they're still locked, still deadlocked. In that moment, either one of them could push through a stone wall, yet neither can shove the other back. He feels the contest as a full body strain, every cell of his being leaning into the locked blades, and he knows the Blood Angel is doing the same because he feels that too.
You have Khan's axe.
The Blood Angel breathes into his faceplate.
Did you plunder his corpse once the Black Knight was done with him?
Kargus doesn't reply, because the nails steal his words and force adrenaline into his mind in place of language. What he knows, though, is the voice, familiar enough to drill through the nails as they vice around his mind. He knows the voice without knowing why he knows it. But it weakens him, that familiarity. It weakens him, and it weakens the nails. It steals the red raw clarity his precious implants provide, replacing rage with confusion, with doubt, with a creeping unease that the muscles interpret as weakness. Kargus feels himself slipping. He skids back a few centimetres on the dusty ground, and then a few more. The nails aren't biting so hard now. In place of their pathological flood, Kargus feels the lactic burn of aching flesh. He stares into the Blood Angel's eye lenses and he feels mortal. Absolutely, dangerously mortal. This is it, Kargus thinks. This is it. This is how his foes must have felt in the fighting pits. This is what it was to know you might lose. He could die here. The jaws of the preacher's promised hell are right here, opening beneath him. Someone crashes into him from behind, and another warrior jostles into him from the side. And it's not just a duel. He remembers that. He knows it. It's a battle. They're still in the thick of the fighting. Both of them have to keep aware of other combatants. He wants to call for Inzar to summon the preacher for aid. Pride prevents him. But that pride is eroding fast, eaten up by something that tastes a little too much like fear. He feels it then. He knew it was coming, and here it is, the crux moment where the clinch has to break. Kargus moves with all the preternatural speed granted by transhuman genetics and the technological miracles of Astarte's warplate. He disengages with a roar and moves back and the Blood Angel is still on him, moving faster, giving him no room. Kargus grunts with the impact as the Blood Angel headbutts him between their joined blades. A crunch, a crash, a tolling clang of ceramite. But it's fine. It's fine, it's only pain. He just needs space. He just needs room to swing Gorechild, and then he can finish this. He can. Except that's when his eye catches fire. Because the headbutt shattered his helmet's lens, and he realizes as he tries to blink that the plastic shards have been driven into his eye socket. And he's half blind now, and...
Too slow, Bloodspitter,
the Blood Angel growls in Nagrakali, the mongrel tongue of the 12th Legion.
Too slow!
And he knows then. He knows. The Blood Angel's words prize off the last of the nail's bite, and Kargus knows who he's fighting. He knows the faceplate. He knows the armour. He sees the name on the Blood Angel's shoulder guard, the name written in dusty gold, the name of the man he was chained to 100 times as they fought together in the arena. The name shouted in the Conqueror's pits, and he knows the mockery in the Blood Angel's voice, because it was the same mockery the Blood Angel would use to goad their foes, and the two of them face each other for the first time, and everything slows down. The nails are silent in Kargos's mind, and so is the war all around him.
"Ammit," he says. "My brother."
And Ammit, the flesh terror, his arena partner for years, his own chain brother, spits on his broken face and cuts his throat.
"Eat shit, traitor."